turns out that, you know, the vaccines were developed not by Moderna and Pfizer. They were developed by NIH. They're owned, the patents are owned 50% by NIH, nor were they manufactured by Pfizer or by Moderna. They were manufactured by military contractors. And basically, Pfizer and Moderna were paid to put their stamps on those vaccines as if they came from the pharmaceutical industry. But, you know, that's not what they were doing. They were coming from, you know, this was a military project from the beginning.
Scott with SJWellFire.com. Just a quick news brief. What I want to do is put a compilation of videos together that you can send to a loved one to stop them from even thinking about poking themselves with either old school poison pokes or the so-called DNA defilement poison pokes. So I'm going to actually play a video of Z Media with a study about long COVID and how this destroys your immune system. This has been known forever. RFK Jr., how the, as the days of Noah Devil Juice during the pandemic was a military operation. I'm going to play a doctor on how he talked about it. If you've been poked two or three different times, your gold standard antibodies are low. He's basically telling you the more you poke yourself, the more your God-given immunity system is destroyed. And then I want to play a 10-minute mini documentary about autism as well. Folks, they want you sick, dumb, controlled, and dead. The mind-controlled part of this as well. And when you watch the videos, I'm going to put thumbnails of all the different times we've done VCast on this topic. And I'm probably not even touching half of them because I'm not going to even include the optogenetics mind control as in part of this. But just a couple highlights and look for those thumbnails is we know heart issues have skyrocketed with myocarditis and other heart ailments since the days of Noah Devil Juice. So they defiled it with this mRNA tech, and then they're launching cures with it. And the same thing with cancers. Cancers are exploding. So we heard Larry Ellison say with Trump's Stargate AI Center announcement that we'll be able to cure it. Personalized medicine, don't fall for any of that. We discussed all of a sudden now they don't understand why kids are getting dementia. Why are kids getting dementia? Kids dropping dead all of a sudden. All the athletes dropping dead. And brain fog is a big one as well. I did a podcast on all these different stories of why people are having brain fog. I wonder why. And then, of course, we wrote that book, Seal One is Open. When you look at Bo, it means toxin, and it'll be in waves. For this mind controlism technology, Trump said his blood is in the vaccine. Corona crown. I mean, it's absolutely wickedness. But we actually covered that insurance executives say that the death rate with his clients that are 18 to 65 working aged people, he does life insurance. He said it was a 40% death rate increase that would basically bankrupt the company. I wonder personally, I wonder if there's some backdoor money from the government saying, shh, we'll keep you afloat. I'm speculating. It's just an opinion. Also within the thumbnails, I cover or look for the London Times and HIV in Africa in that decimation. Check that VCast out. And then the BBC saying they have HIV strains in the as the days of Noah Devil Juice. And if you've taken it, just pray against it. Fast pray. Personally, I think it's an operating system, but I think there's another step for it to be 100% implemented for the mark of the beast. And I've done a podcast on that. Is the CV19 vaccine the mark of the beast? You can search it on sjwellfire.com. I did a Bible study on it. A lot of my listeners will call me out and say, no, it is. And granted, I did do a Mac ID test. People are showing up as Mac IDs, but they're not worshiping an image yet, right? And they can still buy and sell. So check that VCast out. You gave me $1 billion to take it, I wouldn't take the $1 billion. So I think it's wicked. Don't get me wrong. But I want to actually leave you with this, and we've covered Charles Lieber from Harvard and his nanotech that reminds me of Neuralace. And he worked with Musk. He worked with China for this mind controlism technology. There's something about this that then when you look at the medical journals fit what we saw within the as days of Noah Devil Juice during the pandemic, I have to speak in code with this optogenetics mind controlism technology. But I thought this was a well-written comment from Revelations and Rabbit Holes. The Future of Mind Control, the Harvard Gazette. Liber, a specialist in nanotechnologies, a field that is getting billions of investments from the DOD and private sector, was arrested in 2020 in two China-related cases of spying and smuggling. So China has this technology. I think their wings are the same bird. Might have some infighting, but I think that's why Jesus said, don't worry about wars and rumors of wars. Let's continue. He also worked with Musk as the top scientist to help develop Neuralink. Imagine that. So Neuralink or Neuralace, Elon said, we don't need invasive surgery with the chip. So get the chip part out of your head. It's one of the thumbnails I'm going to show at the top of this video. To that end, Liber's lab is designing smaller, more flexible electronic brain implants that move with brain tissue instead of against it. His mesh electronics mimic the size, shape, and feel of real neurons, can record, track, modulate individual neurons and circuits for up to a year or more. That's probably why they got to continuously poke you and provoke almost no immune response. In addition, Liber's electronics have already demonstrated a valuable trick of their own. They encourage neural migration, potentially guiding newborn neurons to damaged areas like pockets created by a stroke. Is that crazy? Absolutely crazy. Oh, I just posted this on Telegram. Government owns your thoughts. An old VCast I did came out in a court case. This is mind controlism, my friends. And then the other story I covered here is DNA storing your cryptocurrency passcodes, screams Mark the Beast infrastructure. But let's get into it again. I'm going to play a bunch of videos. This is one that you need to send to people that have kids. My heart goes out to the kids. If you're an adult and you want to poke yourself, that's your choice. But the kids, that haunts me. It absolutely haunts me. A baby. I became so awake and aware to vaccines when I'd hear women's stories. It was somewhere a podcast where this woman, all she did was interview other women in their testimony of these poison poke damaged kids. And it was the same baby was looking around, goes in for the schedule and just dead eyes. Heartbreaking. And then some of the trauma that they've had. I mean, families breaking up.
So the key message from our finding is that we found that recipients of the Pfizer vaccine, those who've had two doses, have about 5 to 6-fold lower amounts of neutralizing antibodies. Now, these are the sort of gold standard private security antibodies of your immune system, which block the virus from getting into your cells in the first place. So we found that that's less for people with two doses. We've also found that for people with only one dose of the Pfizer jab, that they are less likely to have high levels of these antibodies in their blood. And perhaps most importantly for all of us going forward is that we see that the older you are, the lower your levels are likely to be. And the time since you've had your second jab, as that time goes on, the lower your levels are also likely to be. So that's telling us that we're probably going to be needing to prioritize boosters for older and more vulnerable people coming up soon, especially if this new variant spreads.
Now, this next story is intricately linked to our previous story, and we're going to go through it in detail, but we encourage everyone to read the article in full and share it. Top Yale scientists find disturbing immune system changes after COVID-19 injections. The study is led by Bornali Bhattacharjee from Yale University of Medicine in collaboration with multiple departments, including immunobiology, biostatistics, and the Center for Outcomes Research and Evaluation at Yale, along with external contributors from Mount Sinai and other institutions. The co-senior authors include Lei-Ying Guan, Harlan Krumholz, and Akiko Iwasaki, all affiliated with Yale. Note that Krumholz and Iwasaki have been leaders in delving into questions of long COVID and long vax. The study investigates whether individuals experiencing chronic symptoms after COVID-19 injection, referred to as post-vaccination syndrome or PVS, exhibit distinct immunological and antigenic signatures. The authors hypothesize that persistent antigemia, immune dysregulation, and viral reactivation, e.g. Epstein-Barr virus, contribute to PVS pathophysiology. Alex Berenson broke this on X and said, "I don't use the term VAIDS or vaccine-induced AIDS, but I'm not sure how else to describe the T-cell changes the Yale team is finding." On the study design and methods, it says this decentralized cross-sectional case control study included 42 individuals with PVS and 22 healthy vaccinated controls recruited from the Yale Listen study. Participants were assessed for immune cell populations, cytokine response, antibody levels, viral reactivation markers, autoantibodies, and circulating SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. You can see some of the shots from the study there. Key methodologies include flow cytometry to assess immune cell phenotypes, enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay or ELISA for SARS-CoV-2 specific antibodies and Epstein-Barr virus reactivation markers, SPEAR immunoassay for detecting circulating spike protein, serological epitope repertoire analysis or SERA to analyze autoantibody profiles, and machine learning, lasso regression, for identifying immune signatures predictive of PVS. The study controlled for potential confounding by stratifying participants based on SARS-CoV-2 infection history and adjusting for vaccination status. Now on the key findings, the study identified several key immunological alterations in PVS participants. Altered T-cell immunophenotypes were observed with reduced memory and effector CD4 plus T-cells, including both THI and TH2 subsets, alongside a significant increase in TNFA plus CD8 plus T-cells, indicating heightened inflammatory responses. Lower anti-spike IgG titers were also noticed, correlating with fewer vaccine doses received. An infection-naive PVS participant, these levels declined significantly over time post-vaccination. Now, additionally, a subset of PVS patients exhibited serological evidence of recent Epstein-Barr virus reactivation, marked by elevated anti-GP42 and anti-GP350 antibodies, with increased GP42 reactivity associated with higher TNFA plus CD8 plus T cell frequencies, suggesting potential immune dysregulation. Persistent circulating SARS-CoV-2 spike protein was detected in some PVS participants up to 709 days post-vaccination using the SPEAR immunoassay, paralleling findings in long COVID studies where persistent antigemia has been linked to prolonged symptoms. You can see another snapshot from the study there. Now, I'm going to take you through some of the potential implications that they've identified. They say that emerging research on persistent PVS is raising critical concerns about long-term immune responses in a subset of individuals. One of the most striking findings is the presence of a circulating spike protein months to years post-injection, suggesting that in some cases, injection-derived antigens are not efficiently cleared. This persistent antigenemia could be driving chronic inflammation and prolonged immune activation, mirroring mechanisms observed in long COVID. They say that compounding this issue, evidence of Epstein-Barr virus reactivation in PVS patients has been identified. A troubling finding given EBV's well-documented role in autoimmune diseases, such as multiple sclerosis, systemic lupus. Elevated autoantibody levels further suggest that dysregulated immunity post-vaccination may trigger or exacerbate autoimmune responses, raising significant concerns about long-term health implications. And then you have, they say that increased TNFA plus or CD8 T cell activation points to an ongoing inflammatory state that may underlie the systemic fatigue, neurological symptoms, and immune dysfunction reported by PVS patients, an immune signature that closely resembles long COVID. while COVID-19 vaccines have been instrumental in controlling the pandemic, their words, not mine. These findings highlight the urgent need for further investigation into rare but persistent immune-related adverse events. Moving forward, refining vaccine strategies such as dose modifications or novel adjuvants may be essential in mitigating prolonged immune activation in susceptible individuals, ensuring that vaccination remains both effective and safe for all populations. Again, their words, not mine. So they discussed some of their limitation, including a small sample size, potential recall and selection bias, and no direct causal link established. And you can read what the details are around that in the article. But Bhattacharjee et al.'s study provides compelling evidence of immune dysregulation in individuals with chronic illness post-COVID-19 injection, including altered T-cell populations, EBV reactivation, autoantibody production, and persistent spike antigenemia. While the findings warrant further investigation, they raise important questions about the mechanisms underlying prolonged post-vaccination symptoms. Future research should focus on validating these biomarkers, exploring therapeutic interventions, and refining vaccine strategies to minimize adverse immune responses. You can download the full study that we've linked on the Vigilant News Network article.
Oh my God, I cannot believe we did what we did. But we did. It's all there. It's all there.
This is a real story of a real fraud.
It's the lowest point in my career that I went along with that paper.
Deliberate, high-level deception of the American people with disastrous consequences for its children's health. In order to give context to the extraordinary story that you're about to hear, a little historical perspective is important. Many of you will have heard of Tuskegee. Dirt poor sharecroppers in Macon County, Alabama. Black men with syphilis. From 1932, 339 men were told by the Public Health Service, the forerunner of today's CDC, that they had bad blood. The motive of public health doctors was to study the natural history of syphilis in the black man. Natural history in this case means deliberately untreated. These men were deliberately left untreated even when something as effective as penicillin came along. Worse still, those infected were actively prevented by public health doctors from getting this life-saving drug. Men suffered and died. Women continued being infected, and babies continued to be born with congenital syphilis. A shiny new CDC took over in the late 1960s, refused to stop the experiment. Not until every last man had been opened up on their autopsy table. The experiment was stopped, not because the CDC realized the barbaric nature of their enterprise, but because a whistleblower by the name of Peter Buxton leaked the story to a journalist at the Washington Star. The story was published on July 25, 1972, hit the front page of the New York Times, and the experiment was stopped shortly thereafter. Congressional hearings followed. So unethical, so inhumane was this public health experiment that it led to a change in the CDC's code of medical ethics. Except it didn't. 30 years later, the CDC was to do something arguably far worse. Over a decade ago, Dr. Scott Montgomery and I put forward a hypothesis for MMR vaccine and autism. The age that you receive the vaccine influences the risk. This makes sense. For some infections like measles, the age of infection changes the outcome. We shared this hypothesis with vaccine officials, members of the Centers for Disease Control, at meetings in Washington, D.C., and Cold Spring Harbor. A group of senior vaccine safety people at the CDC studied it. It panned out. We were right. At least partly. By November the 9th, 2001, nearly 13 years ago, senior CDC scientists knew that younger age of exposure to MMR was associated with an increased risk of autism. In 2004, they published, but they hid the results.
That's the lowest point in my career that I went along with that paper. And I went along with this. We didn't report significant findings.
MMR was declared safe.
The IOM has evaluated this issue back in 2004 and again most recently in 2011. And you know, their conclusion, again, it was not just looking at the work that was done at CDC, but with the total body of evidence, was suggesting that vaccines and their components did not increase the risk for autism.
What Dr. Colleen Boyle, a co-author of that blighted paper, did not tell Congress is that she and her colleagues had deliberately concealed the autism vaccine link from the Institute of Medicine and the public. Ironically, they even received an award from the Secretary of Health and Human Services for this work. So troubling was the fraud that one of the CDC researchers broke ranks. Eventually, he made contact with Dr. Brian Hooker, father of a vaccine-injured child with autism and a vaccine safety researcher.
I received a phone call out of the blue. It had a 404 area code, so I knew it was from the CDC. Lo and behold, it was Bill Thompson. He had much to confess.
I'm completely ashamed of what I did. I have great shame now. I was complicit, and I went along with this.
Dr. Thompson had appointed me his priest. And when he appointed me his priest, then he started confessing. And we have had many, many phone exchanges. We've exchanged dozens of emails, and he has released quite compelling information regarding fraud and malfeasance in the CDC.
We didn't report significant findings.
Thompson sent Hooker information that was never intended for public scrutiny. From their own data sheets dated 2001, Dr. Hooker analyzed the CDC's results, and he found the same risk for autism that the CDC scientists had themselves identified.
It's all there. It's all there.
He confronted Thompson.
He has expressed significant remorse for lying, for burying data.
I have great shame now when I meet families with kids with autism because I have been part of the problem.
This week, August the 10th, 2014, Dr. Hooker published the real findings. A 340% increased risk of autism in boys receiving the MMR on time compared with those receiving it later. 13 years and tens of thousands of children later. But as I've said, Dr. Montgomery and I were only partly right. The risk of autism from early MMR vaccination was seen in black children, black boys. Those boys, for some reason, are at very high risk. Consistent with the CDC's own findings, the rate of autistic regression in black children is reported to be twice that in white children.
Oh my God, I cannot believe we did what we did.
Tuskegee Revisited. Scientist Dr. David Lewis, an international expert in whistleblowing and the detection of scientific fraud, reviewed the original CDC documents and the paper they published in 2004.
Probably this is the clearest case and the easiest case in which to answer, is it fraud or is it an accident? Is it just an artifact of the study that we're dealing with here? Clearly it's fraud.
He knows that he's culpable for damage. He knows that he's culpable for permanent damage of a large, significant portion of the population of the United States.
The higher-ups wanted to do certain things, and I went along with it.
Dr. Frank DiStefano, Dr. Marshallin Jürgen Alsop, Dr. Colleen Boyle. They knew. They let it happen, and they could have stopped it. Michigan lawyer Allison Folmar, an award-winning advocate for children and parental rights, gave her reaction.
I feel, first and foremost, as a human being, you know, betrayed. When you lose your faith and trust in humanity, you know, how do you How do you repair that? I mean, I don't really know what to say, to be honest.
Thompson is very regretful about his involvement.
That's the lowest point in my career that I went along with that paper. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I basically have stopped lying.
You see, vile as the crimes of Stalin, Pol Pot, and Hitler were, these men were not hypocrites. Their motives ambiguous or their rhetoric glazed with apparent caring and compassion. These men were not entrusted with the welfare of their victims. Their mottos did not include the words to save lives and protect. They were not running a mandatory program disguised as caring. How many children? How many went to the wall in that decade of silence? How many presidents, Mr. Obama?
Studies done by two NIH, NIAID-funded investigators, Ryan Fouché and Yoshi Kawayoka, in which H5N1, a strain from Indonesia and a strain from Vietnam, were altered in a gain of function, either by direct mutation or by reassortment. By passage in ferrets, the mammal model for this virus, for humans, there was an increase, in fact, in a development of aerosol transmissibility.
The current wave we're in started in early 2021. It's actually a product of gain-of-function research out of the USDA Poultry Research Center. It's a milder strain, but it's spread from chickens to migratory waterfowl like mallard ducks. So it's reinfecting the farms over and over again. It's gotten into cattle.
The real biosecurity threat that these university labs are doing these bio experiments that are intentionally modifying viruses and bird flu, where they are teaching these viruses how to be more infectious for humans.
Currently, at least three mRNA bird flu injections being developed, and the most concerning one is by Arcturus Therapeutics in the United States. They're currently running a trial funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're testing this self-amplifying replicon bird flu, and they call it a pandemic injection. I'm not sure how they know that there'll be a pandemic.
What should be happening in the Biden administration right now that isn't going on?
Yeah, there are two main things that they should be doing in the days that they have left. The first is to get testing out there. I feel like we should have learned our lesson from COVID that just because we aren't testing, it doesn't mean that the virus isn't there. It just means that we aren't looking for it. We should be having rapid tests, home tests available to all farm workers, to their families, for the clinicians taking care of them so that we aren't waiting for public labs and CDC labs to tell us what's bird flu or not. And the second very important thing is, this is not like the beginning of COVID where we were dealing with a new virus, we didn't have a vaccine. There actually is a vaccine developed already against H5N1. The Biden administration has contracted with manufacturers to make almost 5 million doses of the vaccine. However, they have not asked the FDA to authorize the vaccine. There's research done on it. They could get this authorized now and also get the vaccine out and to farm workers and to vulnerable people. I think that's the right approach because we don't know what the Trump administration is going to be doing around bird flu. If they have people coming in with anti-vaccine stances, could they hold up vaccine authorization? If they don't want to know how much bird flu is out there, could they withhold testing? I mean, that's a possibility. And I think the Biden administration in the remaining days should get testing and vaccines widely available so that at least it empowers state and local health officials and clinicians to do the right thing for their patients.
Dr. Nguyen, is bird flu in humans super dangerous?
Well, the World Health Organization estimates that in prior outbreaks of the bird flu, that the mortality rate is 52%. 52%. However, in this most recent outbreak, it seems that most cases have been mild, and maybe some people even have asymptomatic infection. But the question is, we don't know what happens when bird flu affects more vulnerable individuals. People infected so far in the U.S. have been mainly farm workers who are working, presumably generally healthy, as opposed to what happens when you get to children, to pregnant women, to older individuals with chronic illnesses. We don't know how deadly, how dangerous bird flu is going to be for those individuals. And again, that's one more reason why we don't want it to spread and acquire more mutations.